A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it's the kind of question that makes you look at every construction site and utility truck differently. He's asking about trip boards and amber strobe lights as social engineering tools, the way a foldable A-frame sign or a magnetic blinking light on your roof can make people just move out of your way, no questions asked. He wants to know what the law actually says about using these on private vehicles, specifically in Israel, the EU, and anywhere else we can dig up. And he draws this clean parallel. The trip board is the pedestrian version, the amber strobe is the vehicular version. Same trick, different audience.
The trick is devastatingly simple. Picture this, you're driving, and ahead of you there's a sedan with a magnetic amber strobe on the roof and a sign on the back that says wide load. What do? You give it space. You don't even think about it. That's a $30 battery-powered light and a $20 magnetic sign turning a Honda Civic into something your brain reads as authorized.
That's the number that gets me. The barrier to looking official enough that strangers defer to you is roughly the price of lunch for two. And Daniel's right to flag this. These things are everywhere now. $15 to $50 for a magnetic amber strobe on Amazon. $50 to $150 for a trip board at any hardware store. The hardware has never been cheaper or easier to get.
That's what makes this worth a full episode. We're going to walk through the psychology of why these cues override our critical thinking so reliably, the specific hardware that's out there and how it works, and then the legal tightrope. What's permitted and what's not across three very different legal regimes, from private parking garages all the way to public highways.
The legal part is where it gets genuinely interesting, because it's not a simple yes or no anywhere. Some states basically shrug at amber lights, others treat them like you're halfway to impersonating a cop. Israel has its own framework. Germany has another. Japan is apparently extremely strict. We'll get into all of it.
Let's start with the basics. What exactly makes a trip board or an amber strobe such effective tools for social engineering?
It's the authority heuristic. Our brains have this shortcut where we defer to anything that looks like it carries official weight, because actually stopping to verify every single time would be exhausting. A trip board on a sidewalk doesn't need a person standing next to it explaining why it's there. The design does all the work. Municipal-looking typography, reflective stripes, maybe a little pictogram of a guy shoveling. Your brain sees it and goes, authorized closure, and you step into the street without a second thought.
The key thing Daniel flagged, which I think is the central insight here, is that this isn't about impersonating emergency services. Nobody's talking about blue and red lights. That's a hard line in every jurisdiction, and nobody should be anywhere near it. Amber is different. Amber occupies this perceptual and legal gray zone. It signals, I'm working here, not pull over. It says utility, construction, tow truck, wide load. Not police, not ambulance, not fire.
Which is exactly why it works. If you saw a red and blue light bar on a sedan, your brain would immediately start scrutinizing. Is that an unmarked car? Is it legit? Amber doesn't trigger that scrutiny. Amber just triggers deference.
The trip board does the same thing for pedestrians. You see one of those yellow A-frame signs that says sidewalk closed, with an arrow pointing you to the other side of the street, and the question that almost nobody asks is, who put this here? Is this actually municipal? Is this a private contractor with a permit? Or is this just some guy who bought a sign at Home Depot and wants this sidewalk clear for the next hour?
The answer is almost always option 3, because the first two require paperwork, and the third requires $50 and a trunk big enough to fold the sign flat.
And the psychology is identical in both cases. It's what social engineers call pretexting. You're creating a visual pretext that does the authority work for you. You don't have to say, I'm authorized to be here. The trip board says it. The amber strobe says it. The Hi-Vis vest says it, you're just the guy standing next to the sign, and people assume you belong to it.
Kahneman System 1 and System 2, thinking maps onto this perfectly. System 1 is fast, automatic pattern matching. It sees amber strobe pattern matches to authorized vehicle and produces yield. System 2 is the slow, analytical one that might ask, wait, is that actually a utility truck, or is that a 2008 Toyota Corolla with something stuck to the roof? But System 2 is lazy. It doesn't get out of bed unless System 1 flags something weird, and the whole point of these tools is that nothing gets flagged.
This is where the hardware design matters more than people realize. A cheap amber strobe doesn't just blink. It has flash patterns. Single flash, double flash, quad flash, rotating beacon simulation. And certain patterns are associated with specific types of vehicles. A slow rotating beacon reads as construction or utility. A rapid double flash reads as tow truck. If you match the pattern to the signage you're displaying, the illusion tightens.
Now you're not just a guy with a blinking light. You're a guy with a blinking light that blinks exactly the way a tow truck blinks, and your magnetic sign says, oversized load, and you're driving slowly in the right lane with your hazards on. Nobody's running your plates. Nobody's asking for credentials. You've built a complete character out of $50 in hardware and some attention to detail.
This is where Daniel's question gets really practical. Because the trip board version of this, the pedestrian equivalent, is arguably even more powerful. A trip board doesn't just suggest authority, it physically reshapes the environment. It takes a public sidewalk and turns it into a closed zone with nothing but folded metal and some screen-printed letters. You deploy it, you step back, and the city reorganizes itself around your sign.
The 2019 prank video is the canonical example here. A guy in a high-vis vest sets up a trip board on a busy sidewalk, puts down some cones, and for 4 hours redirects pedestrians around a non-existent construction site. Nobody challenges him. Nobody calls the city. Some of them even thank him for the warning.
That's the other layer. The social engineering doesn't just exploit deference to authority, it also exploits gratitude. When someone redirects you around a hazard, your brain registers it as helpful. You're not being inconvenienced, you're being protected. The trip board isn't an obstacle, it's a service. Same with an amber strobe on the highway. Drivers don't resent the vehicle taking up space. They appreciate the warning that something unusual is happening ahead.
Which makes it nearly frictionless. Most social engineering requires some kind of interaction. A phone call, an email, a person at a door asking to be let in. These tools bypass interaction entirely. They work on people who never even make eye contact with you.
Let's get into the hardware. On the amber strobe side, you've basically got three tiers. Tier 1 is the magnetic battery-powered units. $15 to $50 on Amazon, they run on AA or rechargeable batteries. They stick to any steel roof panel, and they're completely removable in seconds. No wiring, no installation, no permanent modification to the vehicle. Tier 2 is the hardwired professional-grade stuff. Wieland, Federal Signal, Sound-Off Signal. Their amber strobes run $100 to $300, require wiring into the vehicle's electrical system, and are significantly brighter and more durable. Tier 3 is the full light bar, a mounted bar across the roof with multiple amber modules, 500 up, permanently installed. At that point, you're making a fairly emphatic statement about being an authorized vehicle.
Daniel's question is really about Tier 1, right? The accessible stuff. The thing anyone can buy with a credit card and have delivered tomorrow.
10 years ago, getting an amber strobe meant going to a specialty supplier. Now you type magnetic amber strobe into a search bar and you've got 50 options with same-day delivery. The barrier isn't just low, it's basically gone.
The trip board side is even simpler. Hardware stores stock these as standard inventory. $50 to $150 gets you a foldable A-frame sign with reflective stripes and interchangeable lettering. They fold flat, weigh maybe 15 pounds, and deploy in about 10 seconds.
The design language is what's interesting here. Trip boards are deliberately generic. They don't have company logos. They don't have permit numbers. They don't identify who placed them or under what authority. They're designed to be universal. One sign works for any contractor, any municipality, any situation, and that universality is exactly what makes them exploitable. If trip boards were required to display a permit number or a company name, the social engineering angle would collapse. You'd walk past one and think, who's working here? Instead of, I should cross the street.
It's almost like they were designed to be borrowed. the feature that makes them useful for legitimate contractors. The generic, one-size-fits-all design is the same feature that makes them useful for anyone who wants to look like a legitimate contractor.
The high-vis vest completes the package. You can buy a Class 2 high-vis vest for $8. Put it on, stand near your trip board or your strobe-equipped vehicle, and you've closed the loop. Now there's a person who belongs to the sign and the light. The visual narrative is complete.
I want to pause on the vest for a second, because it's doing something specific psychologically. A trip board alone creates ambiguity. Is this authorized or not? The vest resolves that ambiguity in the direction of authority. It says, I am the person who placed this sign, and I am supposed to be here. The vest is the cheapest component of the whole setup, and it might be the most important.
There's research on this. One study from the University of Kent had a person in a high-vis vest ask pedestrians to perform various tasks, and the compliance rate was something like 60% higher than the same person in street clothes asking the same things.
For an $8 vest,
the mechanism isn't even conscious for most people. It's not that they think this person is an authority figure. It's that the vest triggers a learned association, person in reflective gear near construction, someone I should listen to, and the behavior follows automatically. The thinking comes later, if it comes at all.
If we're mapping this out, the complete social engineering toolkit for urban environments is 1 amber strobe, magnetic, battery-powered, $15 to $50. 1 trip board, $50 to $150. 1 high-vis vest, $8. Maybe some magnetic signage for the vehicle. Wide load, oversized load, caution, utility work ahead, another $20 to $40. Total investment, under $250, and you can command deference from pedestrians and drivers alike.
To be clear, we're not the first people to notice this. There's a whole subculture online. Reddit threads, forums, YouTube channels, dedicated to what people call urban social engineering or practical authority hacking. The amber strobe trick for bypassing traffic by pulling onto the shoulder is a recurring topic. People describe doing it in rush hour, driving past hundreds of stopped cars, and nobody honks, nobody blocks them, nobody calls the police. The strobe does all the work.
The shoulder thing is interesting because it's one of the few scenarios where the social engineering is directed at other drivers who are actively frustrated. Everyone in that traffic jam is annoyed. Everyone wants to move. And yet, when someone with an amber strobe pulls onto the shoulder and drives past, the reaction isn't, hey, that guy's cheating. The reaction is, oh, that must be an authorized vehicle responding to something. The frustration doesn't override the deference cue.
Which tells you how deep this runs. It's not just politeness or social convention. It's a trained response that operates below the level of conscious evaluation. Decades of conditioning. Seeing amber lights on tow trucks, construction vehicles, utility trucks, wide load escorts have wired the connection directly. Amber equals authorized. No thinking required.
The flip side of that is what makes the trip board so effective on pedestrians. We've all been trained since childhood that when a sidewalk is closed, you go around. You don't argue with the sign. You don't look for the permit. You just follow the arrow. The trip board exploits a lifetime of civic conditioning in a single foldable piece of plastic.
There's one more piece I want to add before we move into the legal side. Both the trip board and the amber strobe operate in what you might call pre-enforcement space. By the time anyone with actual authority shows up to question what's happening, the user is usually gone. The trip board gets folded up and put back in the trunk. The magnetic strobe gets pulled off the roof and tossed in the back seat. The whole setup is designed to be temporary and portable.
It's not like installing a fake security booth or painting a fake loading zone on the curb. Those are semi-permanent, and they invite scrutiny over time. These tools are deployable in seconds and removable in seconds. You use them for the specific window you need. Getting through a traffic jam, clearing a sidewalk from moving furniture, accessing a loading dock that's technically restricted, and then they disappear.
That temporariness is itself part of the social engineering. If you saw a permanent sign on a sidewalk that said closed with no permit information, you might eventually get suspicious. But a trip board that wasn't there yesterday and won't be there tomorrow? Your brain slots it into the category of temporary work and moves on. The brevity of the deployment is a feature, not a bug.
The psychology and the hardware are clear. These are cheap, accessible tools that exploit deeply trained deference responses, and they work precisely because they don't look like they're trying to work. But the big question, the one Daniel's really asking, is what the law actually says about all of this. Because nobody stopped me is not the same as this is legal.
That's where it gets complicated, because the legal landscape around Amber Stroves in particular is a patchwork. Some jurisdictions basically don't care. Others have very specific statutes about who can display what kind of light and under what circumstances. And enforcement patterns don't always match what's written in the law.
Let's get into that. The psychology and hardware are the how. Now we need the can you.
Let's start with the you, because it's the jurisdiction most of our listeners are in, and it's a mess. In the interesting way, not the boring way. At the federal level, FMVSS 28, Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard 28, regulates vehicle lighting, and it generally permits amber lights for hazard warning purposes on any vehicle. But that's just the floor. States layer their own restrictions on top, and they vary wildly.
Give me the spread.
California is one of the strictest. Under CVC Section 25252, amber flashing lights are allowed only on authorized emergency vehicles, tow trucks, and certain construction vehicles. If you're a private citizen in a Honda Civic with a magnetic strobe on the roof, you're technically in violation, even if you're using it to warn other drivers about a hazard. The law doesn't carve out an exception for. I felt like it was a good idea. Texas is basically the opposite. TXDOT guidelines say any vehicle may display an amber light for hazard warning purposes. That's it. No special permit, no restricted vehicle class. If you want to put an amber strobe on your car to warn people you're changing a tire on the shoulder, Texas says fine. The legal philosophy is completely different. Texas treats amber as a safety tool available to everyone. California treats it as a restricted signal that implies official status.
Which is exactly the tension Daniel's question gets at. The same light means different things legally, depending which side of a state line you're on.
New York splits the difference. Under VTL Section 117A, amber lights are restricted to hazard vehicles, a defined term covering tow trucks, road maintenance, and vehicles specifically designated by the commissioner. Your personal sedan doesn't qualify unless you've got a designation. But here's the thing. Enforcement is almost non-existent unless you're also committing another infraction.
The law on the books is strict, but the law on the street is basically don't give us a reason to look.
That's the pattern across most jurisdictions. The 2023 LA case is the perfect example. Driver uses an amber strobe to bypass a 2-hour traffic jam on the 405 by driving on the shoulder. CHP eventually pulls him over, but not because of the light, because he's on the shoulder. The officer only cites him for improper use of warning lights after noticing the unit was battery-powered and magnetic, not hardwired. The strobe itself wasn't what triggered the stop. The driving behavior was.
If he'd been using the strobe while sitting in a parking lot or on a private road, nobody would have looked twice.
Which brings us to the private property loophole, and this is important. Most state vehicle lighting laws apply to public roadways. On private property, parking garages, construction sites, private roads, loading docks, those statutes generally don't reach. If you're in a private parking structure with your amber strobe on, California's CVC 25252 doesn't apply. You're not on a public highway.
The entire legal framework dissolves the moment you're off public roads.
There are edge cases. Some states define public highway, broadly enough to include parking lots that are open to the public, even if privately owned. A mall parking lot might count. But a gated garage or a private loading dock? Almost certainly not. The private property gray zone is where most of the practical use cases Daniel's describing actually live.
Which makes it a very convenient gray zone. The places where these tools are most useful, parking garages, private event spaces, loading areas, are precisely the places where the legal risk is lowest.
Now Israel is a different story, and Daniel specifically asked about it. Israeli traffic regulations restrict flashing lights to emergency vehicles, military vehicles, and vehicles with special permits from the Ministry of Transport. Amber lights are not authorized for private vehicles under standard licensing. There's no Texas-style hazard warning for everyone provision.
You mentioned enforcement is inconsistent.
I've looked into this because I've seen it myself driving here. Plenty of construction and utility vehicles run amber strobes without displaying explicit permits. It's one of those things where the regulation says one thing and daily practice says another. The police generally don't stop a truck with an amber beacon unless there's another reason. Same dynamic as the U, but with less legal ambiguity on paper. The law is clear. The enforcement is selective.
The penalty if they do enforce.
Approximately 1,000 shekels. That's about $270 at current exchange rates and potential impoundment of the vehicle. The impoundment part is what makes it serious. A $270 fine is annoying. Having your car towed is a much bigger problem.
The risk-reward calculus in Israel is steeper than in Texas, but probably comparable to California. The law is stricter on paper, but the enforcement pattern, don't give them a reason, is similar.
If we zoom out to Europe, the spectrum gets even wider. Germany, under Stevie Zio Section 52, restricts amber warning lights to vehicles with special rights, tow trucks, road maintenance, and vehicles over a certain width. Private use isn't contemplated. The UK is more permissive. Amber beacons are allowed on slow-moving vehicles and vehicles with an operational need, but they require type approval. You can't just stick any magnetic unit on your roof and call it compliant. France is the strict end of the spectrum. Only authorized public service vehicles may display amber lights. Not construction, not private towing, not I'm driving slowly. The French approach is basically, if you're not the state or explicitly authorized by the state, no amber for you.
Which is fascinating, because it's the same piece of hardware, the same $30 magnetic strobe, and it's completely legal in Texas, a gray area in Israel, restricted in Germany, and outright banned in France. The hardware is identical. The legal meaning is entirely local.
Japan takes this to an extreme that's worth mentioning as a comparison point. Under the Road Vehicle Act, Article 55, amber strobes are strictly regulated and aftermarket installation requires certification. The result is that there's almost no civilian use. You don't see private cars with amber lights in Japan. The regulatory barrier actually works because the certification requirement creates a real enforcement checkpoint. You can't just buy one and slap it on.
Which is the opposite of the U model, where the hardware is available everywhere and enforcement is reactive rather than preventative.
And that brings us to the enforcement reality across all these jurisdictions, which is the part that doesn't show up in the statutes. Police rarely enforce amber light violations unless the vehicle is also committing another infraction. The social engineering works in part because the visual cue preempts scrutiny. An officer driving past sees the amber strobe and assumes the driver has a legitimate reason. The light itself deters the stop.
The enforcement gap isn't a bug in the system from the user's perspective. It's a feature. The same cue that makes other drivers yield also makes police assume everything's fine.
On the trip board side, the legal picture is similar but quieter. In most U cities, placing a trip board on a public sidewalk without a permit is technically illegal. It's obstruction of a public way, and in some cases it could be charged as false impersonation of an official. But enforcement is nearly non-existent unless someone complains. And almost nobody complains because complaining requires effort and the sign looks official.
The 2019 prank video proves this. 4 hours, busy downtown sidewalk, zero challenges. The legal violation was happening in plain sight the entire time, and the visual design of the trip board made it invisible to enforcement.
In Israel, placing unauthorized signage on public property violates the municipality's ordinance and can result in fines. Same enforcement pattern, though, reactive, complaint-driven, rarely proactive. A trip board on a Jerusalem sidewalk for an hour during a move is technically illegal, practically unenforced, and socially invisible.
If I'm synthesizing this, and I think this is where Daniel was steering us, the legal landscape is less about what's permitted and more about what's enforced. The statutes matter, but the enforcement patterns matter more for anyone actually considering using these tools.
That gap between law and practice is exactly what makes the social engineering viable. If these laws were proactively enforced, the whole trick would collapse.
With all that legal complexity in mind, let's talk about what you can actually do and what you should avoid. Because I think there are some useful takeaways here for listeners who might use these tools for completely legitimate reasons.
First one, if you're considering an amber strobe for something legitimate, say your car is disabled on the shoulder and you want extra visibility, or you're directing traffic at a private event, keep it battery-powered and magnetic. Don't hardwire it. Hardwiring creates a presumption of permanent installation, and in stricter jurisdictions they can trigger additional regulations or at least additional scrutiny from any officer who does look twice. A magnetic unit that lives in your trunk until you need it tells a very different story than wires running through your firewall.
The story being, I'm prepared for an emergency, versus, I've modified my vehicle to look like a fleet truck.
Second takeaway, trip boards are safest on private property. Parking lots, driveways, private roads, those are where the legal exposure is basically zero. On a public sidewalk, the risk isn't really law enforcement showing up. It's that a pedestrian might call the city and trigger an inspection. And once an inspector is involved, you're suddenly dealing with permits and fines and a paper trail you don't want.
If you do need to use one in a gray area, use a generic-looking sign. Nothing that says City Off, anything. Nothing with a municipal logo or a permit number field. The more it looks like a universal contractor supply item, and the less it looks like an official city sign, the weaker any impersonation argument becomes. You're not pretending to be the government, you're just a guy with a sign.
Which is a meaningful legal distinction in most places. Impersonating a municipality is a much bigger deal than being an unpermitted private sign. Third one, and this is probably the most important, know your local laws before you deploy anything. A quick search of your state's vehicle code for flashing amber lights or hazard warning lights will tell you which side of the line you're on. If you're in Texas, you've got broad latitude. If you're in California or New York, the private property loophole is your only safe option. If you're in Israel, you should know the fine is 1,000 shekels and potential impoundment before you make any decisions.
The search takes 5 minutes, and it's the difference between informed risk and blind gambling.
I want to be clear about something, because we've spent this whole episode explaining how these tools work and where the legal gaps are. We're not endorsing illegal activity. The point is to explain the social engineering so listeners can recognize it when they see it and make informed decisions about their own use. If you see a trip board on your usual walking route and you realize you have no idea who put it there, that moment of recognition is the whole point. There's a question I can't shake, and I think it's where this whole thing is heading. A self-driving car doesn't have System 1 and System 2 the way we do. It has a camera and a classifier. If that classifier has been trained to recognize amber strobes as hazard vehicles and yield accordingly, then a $30 magnetic light just became a tool for manipulating robots.
Which is a weird thought. The social engineering we've been describing works on human psychology. Trained deference, cognitive shortcuts, the whole Kahneman framework. But an autonomous vehicle doesn't defer. And if its training data says amber strobe equals authorized utility vehicle, reduce speed, change lanes, then you've got an attack surface that doesn't require a human target at all.
The training data probably does say that because that's the correct behavior around actual utility vehicles. The car should yield. The problem is the car can't tell the difference between a legitimate fleet truck and a 2012 Camry with a magnetic strobe any more than a human can. But the human might eventually get suspicious. The car won't.
Now the arms race isn't between social engineers and police. It's between social engineers and the perception systems of autonomous vehicles. And on the other side, the hardware keeps getting cheaper and more programmable. These LED strobes can now mimic specific flash patterns. The exact cadence of a municipal utility truck. The exact double flash of a highway maintenance vehicle. 10 years ago, you needed a dedicated controller for that. Now it's a chip the size of a fingernail.
Which means the fidelity of the illusion is only going up while the cost keeps going down. Regulators are still debating whether amber lights need permits. And meanwhile, anyone with $50 can program a strobe to flash in the exact pattern of a city works vehicle. The regulatory conversation and the technological reality are on completely different timelines.
Here's the thing I want to leave listeners with, and this isn't a moral, it's a prompt. Next time you see a trip board on a sidewalk or an amber strobe on the road ahead, ask yourself one question. Do you actually know who authorized that? Not does it look official? Not should I just go around? Do you know with any actual certainty that a real authority put that there?
If the answer is no, which it almost always will be, that moment of doubt is the crack in the social engineering. That's the whole thing. The trick works because we don't ask. Once you ask, the illusion has a harder time holding.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, naturalists in the Namib Desert believed lichens were a type of airborne mineral dust that spontaneously transformed into plant matter upon contact with morning dew, a theory that persisted for nearly 2 centuries before anyone thought to look at one under a lens.
Lichens were magic dust for 200 years. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review on your favorite podcast app. It helps other curious minds find us. This has been My Weird Prompts. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.